You're listening to my best two buddies, faces made strictly for radio and not for TV, John Nicholson and Pedro.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 60. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me as always is Mr. Juan Nicholson. John, how you doing, friend?
I'm a little tired from celebrating last night.
Oh, that's right. Which one of those, World Series or Baylor?
World Series.
That's right. That's soccer, right?
Yeah. You got to kick the touchdowns. That's it. Yeah.
That's the one. Go sports.
Sports ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat the Dodgers in the second game to tie it up, and they come back to Houston here shortly. So
nice. All right. Not a big baseball fan myself, so congratulations to those teams. I'll tell you what I am a fan of, though. All the partners that we have in this ecosystem. VMware has like so many great partners that do totally different things, whether it's backup, whether it's hardware, software, and they make VMware solutions better. And so we've got three examples of that this week. We got to talk to Cohesity, to Veeam, and then we also got to talk to Fujitsu. Really cool stories, and I'm excited to share those with you. The first one, John, you didn't even get to hear this one yet because you were out doing one of your 1,000 sessions. And so Mr. Ken Werneberg filled in so graciously, and we spoke to Cohesity about something they're calling eventual consistency. Take a listen.
John's doing a session, and so joining us as co-host is Mr. Ken Werneberg. Ken, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I'm excited that you're here for this one because we are bringing back to the podcast my man, 50 grand, Mr. Rollinson Rivera. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. Loving it. Woo! I love my hit song right there.
The only guy on the Virtually Speaking Podcast that has his own intro music.
And let's keep it that way. I want to keep this special.
We'll definitely keep that song just for you.
Sure.
There haven't been many requests. I'm just saying.
If I start seeing you satisfy other people's requests, it's not going to be as special as it is for me. But I love it. So one of the problems that we've had as VMware folks, admins and all that, is as the management stack continues to grow, we never really had a suitable solution to deliver and recover the infrastructure based on the newly sort of business requirements that are demanding by the what's being brought forward by this whole cloud model, which is operational efficiency and all these immediate stuff. So one of the things that I sort of looked at is that gap. VMware is now transforming from going from vSphere to VMware Cloud Foundation.
Right.
VMware Cloud Foundation is the new stack on the, let me use the term that people were freaking out about in the keynote, the on-premise infrastructure, right? Or the public clouds, which is if you are going to do that, if you're going to consume the infrastructure, that which is great. I mean, I believe in that 100%. If there is a failure in any of the critical components of the stack, can you satisfy the business requirements from a recoverability perspective that matches whether it's cloud or wherever you have that? That's a huge challenge, right? And if we think about, we have several databases, different types within different appliances.
Oh, yeah.
They can grow very big. If you try to restore a VM that's 100 gigs, 200 gigs, whatever it is, it takes time, right?
Yep.
So when you look at some of the technology that's been developed around data protection and some of this data efficiency features and capabilities that are there, they were built based on 10-year-old requirements and technologies that are now outdated, which presents a problem for us and as we're moving to a new era. So with Cohesity, they have a pretty unique technology, some pretty amazing stuff. And part of that is the snapshots. So one of the things that you guys know how I work. I'm like, this, you sell this to do this, but I'm going to make it do something else because there's a problem here. We need to fix it. So very quickly, even while I was at the sale of VMware, I'm looking at Cohesity like, man, I can really restore this entire stack in minutes. No one can do that.
Right.
You can't do this at scale, at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that, we're doing. And what I did for VMworld in Las Vegas, I very heavily advertised like on Twitter. I asked some people, I even asked Howard Marks, asked Keith Townsend. I said, listen, you guys have a lot of experience when it comes to enterprise data center. Before I go and get on stage at my alma mater and like try to say, make this claim, have you ever seen the recovery of a data center's management stack and think VMware and all the components we have under 20 minutes? And they were like,
no.
No. Yeah. Listen, we're not talking replication SRM and all the things, because there's still very much play for that.
Sure.
Right?
Well, that's
they said no.
I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I've seen people, as we all have, and I know John's going to rant about this too, that think that snapshots are backups. And I've seen people that have gone, somebody had their VC running on the cluster itself. It was that recursive sort of management environment. And everything went to hell. So then they were trying to dig it through and find out what had happened. They had exceeded the maximum snapshot chain. They had gone to something like 74 snapshots on their VC, which was then hooked. Even if they could have recovered it, how long would it have taken to have committed? You know, I mean, that would have taken forever. So I guess this is why we're no longer talking about things like data storage. What we're talking about, application recoverability. We're talking about process changes here, which is what you guys
correct
are
or process. Yeah.
So I basically put that together. You know, I see that the new wave is going to be VCF. Let me deliver something that VMware doesn't have today yet. Let's deliver something that would allow the cloud foundation to be adopted a lot faster. Because, you know, if you're an enterprise customer and they already ask, and we live in the enterprise, how do I protect this, the whole thing? Because you can deploy very quickly now, but now how do I bring this back when that fails, right? So now I have the ability to do that and do it effectively in under 20 minutes.
So are you going to do it live on your
session? I wanted to, but, you know, and we did this together, obviously, with VMware. And the racks are sitting back in Prom A with everything there. So I didn't want to really take a chance on, and we could, because it's click, click. There's a couple of ways to do it. It's two clicks to restore the whole thing, or you run it through APIs.
You're getting timid, man. I just assumed that you would do
it live. No, listen, I want to do it live.
It was almost not even a question.
You just got to be like Fox News.
We're doing it live. And right, if that's what you want to hear, maybe, but it's not live. But the incredible thing is that, you know, I started at the VMworld in Vegas with the 20-minute recovery, under 20 minute of the entire VCF stack. But then I took it a little further because someone brought something to my attention. I was asked a question. So that means that you can get rid of SRM? I said, absolutely not. So what I did is that I positioned availability, recoverability.
Right.
VCF gives you availability out of the box. vSAN gives you failure to tolerate times 3 if you want out of the box. You can scale racks and all that. That's availability. Mm-hmm. That's expensive. You can build, but there's always a limit.
Sure.
The limit can come based on money. The limit can come based on a fault domain within the systems you're using. My point is, at a lower level, when these replication devices that you have, that they don't need synchronous replication, and you need to come back when the thing hits the fan, what do you do?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite topics, too, because coming out of that space, the difference between business continuity, disaster recovery, what a business continuity plan looks like, and how really BCE is an umbrella.
Yeah.
And you feed different availability technologies into your business continuity plan. SRM is one of those orchestration disaster recovery types of tools, but it's not necessarily an application restoration or getting your specific application sets back in operation based on some historical state that you've gotten.
Right.
So the ability to augment a business continuity plan with something like this gives us, sounds like the best of both worlds. Right?
I mean, it's really good. And you can obviously satisfy both and be able to recover. But then, so at in Vegas, I did that. And right before, I think it was like maybe on the weekend right before we went to Vegas, Mohit, our CEO, sends me an email around, hey, Rawlinson, something about storage vMotion, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is how it works. When things are on the A-LUN, the locks and everything's are going there, we transfer things over.
Yep.
And he said, maybe you should kind of get into, explain the consistency requirements on the architectures of the products. And I'm like, that's a great idea. So the problem that I'm getting to here is part of the same solution, but here is the beauty. So now that we're getting to the point where several companies, as they should, are evolving and using instant recovery, as they call it, or quick recovery capabilities, they are still based on, I don't want to say legacy, but traditional requirements that are not from the modern world. The reason for that is this. They're built with what's called eventual consistency. What's the problem here? If I'm going to be your insurance policy to restore your stack at every layer, at every level, but I'm going to restore or get one of your VMs, so however many I can get, and put it into a cluster of node, but I'm going to use one node, and I'm going to instantiate some sort of storage abstraction presentation back to vSAN and VCF. You can get it going immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens? You know, there's some
in
good
that
tech
millisecond,
there, you know,
right there.
Right? Yeah. There's some new technology that lets you have access to the VM and the application quickly, but there's no magic when you have to move storage vMotion 100 gigs.
Exactly.
That's going to take some time. Eventual consistency could be milliseconds, could be minutes, could be hours, could be whenever things are quiet. Eventually, it'll go around the rest of the thing. That's a single point of failure that you should not endorse your infrastructure beyond availability, recoverability to do that. In our case, so I included that as the last thing in the demonstration where I actually, as I'm doing the recovery of the VCF stack, I failed one of my nodes. So I said, I asked the folks, hey, listen, you came here to see a 20 minute. They were like, sorry, you're not going to see that today because I'm going to do this extra and you'll see why. So people just loved it. I failed my own infrastructure on top of what's happening. And they saw it was incredible. The response was great.
Right.
And the one here, I took it a step further where instead of just restoring the management stack, we went site to site.
Okay.
So below, we replicated async, right?
All right.
So that you can have, sorry, I'm still going up here for the synchronous and all the other things. But on the bottom here, we basically then just sync all the other data centers. We pull the cables from the top of rack switch, from the data center interconnects, and restore, because I have the entire management stack in another site, and we're now connected.
Right.
I didn't have to restore the management stack, just basically bring back all the applications 4 minutes. I mean, you tell
that's
me.
That's pretty nuts.
It sounds good, man. I got to see it.
I mean, it's the real deal. We couldn't do that before. So now we have a way of doing this.
So, I mean, one of the big delays in terms of the recovery time objectives that we usually see are things that it's not just the technology. It's not just the replication. It's that somebody needs to make a decision that it's time to go. And that can take hours. And then, right. A recovery time objective for somebody doing like a full complete, data centers burned to the ground and smoke is rising up and people are screaming and running around. That can take many hours.
Of course.
Right? So you combine the decision-making process with the recovery time.
Process,
and you're suddenly look at something that's going to be about 8 hours, things along those lines. Now, it sounds like this is actually reducing the risk of doing those sorts of recoveries as well. So the decision-making process might even be impacted by that as well.
Correct. And depending on how the recovery is, when you go across sites, obviously depends on bandwidth, what you have, these kind of capabilities and make it faster. But the deal is this. You now have the ability to put a time on the recovery time is going to take the infrastructure, what manages everything else, what builds, so that you can have an RTO and RPO on the applications themselves.
Yeah.
Right? In this exercise, this was your baby back at, we're in team at VMware, SRM.
Oh, yeah.
We run these processes and the orchestration, all takes time. The re-IP, and all, we could do all instantaneously, right?
Yeah.
It's a very, very good selling. I wanted to do that because, look, there was a gap here. VCF is going to be how VMware is going to go with everything. I want to close the little gap here for now until something else becomes available. And we're working tightly together to sort of deliver better sort of integration, even tighter integration than what we have now, because it's also all driven through policies, just like vSAN. You don't touch. You basically take your requirements, your operations, time to back up, time to recover, boom, boom, done automatically every time.
Nice. Policy-driven.
Mitigating risks from infrastructure management is my thing.
You are the man, my friend.
Well, I think that's exactly what people know you as.
Yeah.
Mitigating something, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Rollinson.
Yeah, that's what I do.
He is the johnniest mitigator I have ever met.
That is kind of true. So that's the thing, right? So I did leverage Cohesity's data protection capability to do this, but there's a lot more to it. We can deliver file services and all these things that are great for storage arrays that do not have their native file systems yet.
Yeah.
S3, NFS. SMB simultaneously. So if you have applications, whoever wants to use it, go directly to it any way you want it, do it. So, it's more than just the backup thing, but I use the hell out of that now with this solution.
Yeah. All right. So that was our good friend Rollinson from Cohesity. First and foremost, John, what'd you think about my co-host, Ken Werneberg?
I think he's amazing. I was just expecting, a 45-minute discussion about the superiority of Cohesity's use of NFS over iSCSI and why LUNs suck. But, not everyone wins. So
Ken did not even do his trademark.
LUNs suck.
But whatever.
Yeah, it's fine. A couple interesting things I got from that I don't know, maybe people may have already got these, maybe obvious, but the importance of the management stack has changed radically. 10 years ago, if your vCenter went down, you were probably mildly annoyed. You're like, I can redeploy it. I need to, go find the database, call my DBAs, restore SQL, whatever.
Yep.
Nowadays, vCenter, vRealize Automation, Composer and Vue, if you haven't moved on to the glory that is instant clones, all of these things, if they go down, you now have automation down. And if automation's down, that can cause a lot of problems.
Oh,
it can
absolutely.
Actually be the same thing as just being down. Like if you've got a non-persistent VDI pool, I've been there and we're sitting there like watching the VROPS counter go down of like free desktops in the pool, like 50, 40, 30, like we got to get Composer back up, or vRealize Automation. Like if you're using the auto scaling functions, you got an e-commerce site and your marketing has just queued up a massive fair sale on Twitter and you're going to quadruple load. If it doesn't auto scale, if your provisioning API commands fail, you are in some serious trouble.
Yeah, it's a full blown outage.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a red escalation. It's a real outage. So the management and the automation stacks used to be things for test dev. They used to be things that were nice to haves, but the users wouldn't notice. Now the users will notice. And so having a solution and focusing a solution for rapid restore of that management stack in place and not having to hit that red button that Ken mentioned can take a while just because of deciding if you really want to invoke your DR plan, that's a really nice thing to have.
I agree. I thought it was a pretty interesting solution they're doing there, using snapshots to boot.
Yeah, it's you know, but I like how they're focused on snapshots from a secondary storage and recovery process, and it's separate from the production. It's not running on the production side.
Yep.
So I feel like snapshots sometimes get overplayed as like, oh, we'll just take snapshots on our primary system and that's a replacement. And Ken kind of talked about these crazy snapshot chains and problems. Yeah. And, you know, snapshots are part of a data recovery process. They are not a backup replacement. So
I agree. Speaking of snapshots, there's another, and I'm not going to call them a backup company because as you and I both know, they are an availability company. We had a chance to talk to our buddies from Veeam. Michael Cade and Anthony Spiteri talked to us about things like Veeam-powered network, availability for AWS using Veeam, and how they have an agentless data protection for VMware Cloud on AWS. Take a listen.
All right, John, we're both Veeam vanguards, and so super excited to have our buddies from Veeam here, Michael Cade and Anthony Spiteri. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Hi, guys.
Anthony, you had a session earlier, yesterday actually, right?
Yeah. So that was on the Veeam-powered network. That's a networking piece. So Veeam is doing networking now, which is surprising, but yeah. nothing that we haven't done before with regards to our network extension appliance with Cloud Connect and our virtual labs as networking pieces in it. So, but this is really about simplifying a VPN, site-to-site, point-to-site. So it's a self-service appliance. You deploy it. It's supposed to be deployed centrally in Azure, but it can be on premises as well. And then it's a web interface. You log in, you do a few settings, literally 3 or 4 clicks, and then you can basically download a configuration file. On the other side, you load that configuration file, and the VPN site-to-site connection gets created. So within like 5 minutes, you're done. It's a very, very good product.
Well, and this addresses a real need. I've heard a lot of people complain on public clouds that, you know, they've got the data there, they've got stuff going there. But particularly for if it's their first interaction, figuring out the networking, how to get data in, getting network transport in, can be very confusing. So
yeah, and we're not trying to sort of say that this is a replacement for, say, NSX and all the cool functionality that's in there, right? It's kind of sits at a small sort of more a step underneath that. However, I've done some cool stuff in the lab with it. So I've actually hooked up for different vCloud director zones. So 3 zones around the country in Australia. I've been able to basically bridge a network between those 3 zones.
So this is doing a layer 2 bridging?
No, it's doing layer 3, yeah. Like, when I say bridge, I mean, I'll mesh it together.
Yeah.
You've done a ton of stuff with vCloud Director.
I have, yeah. It's one of my babies.
It's one of your
passions.
Long live the VCD.
Nah, it's cool. It's making... I'm actually really happy because now I'm on this side and I'm not a customer anymore, not a partner, so I can't contribute like I used to in that official sense, but I'm still obviously doing a lot with it. But I just love where it's going. And in my role, I'm talking to a lot of service providers who are... not VCAN. Can't call it VCAN anymore.
No, it's not VCAN.
What is it? Not VSPP. It's
VCPP.
VCPP. Yeah, which changed a letter off of the old name.
Yeah, which doesn't roll very well, but we'll see how it goes.
VMware Cloud Provider Program?
Yeah, pretty much.
There we go.
So that, I've been speaking to those guys, and they're putting in VCD like no tomorrow. So it's making a comeback, and that makes me happy.
Nice. Michael, what are you doing this week?
So I had a tech talk, but rather than toeing the line with the whole vendor session, I had one on these are the clones you're looking for. Basically how we could leverage our backups, our replicas, and our storage snapshots to spin up an isolated lab pretty quick, pretty easy, so that your test and dev, you can run patch updates, etc. in that isolated bubble, drop it down, getting more leverage out of that backup infrastructure, as well as using the replication site to actually consume and leverage that workload.
That's the thing, man. I think when people think of Veeam, they think, oh, that backup company. But you guys have like outgrown that stereotype, yeah. I think. You guys are...
It's an availability company.
Availability. Yeah.
Availability company. I was there when Vanover announced that to us in Vegas. What was it, 2 years ago? He was like, we're changing our, you know, we're going to be an availability company. And, you know, I want the feedback, you know, are we there yet? Maybe not, but this is kind of aspirational. But no, it's really is, it's there now.
Yeah, I mean, not only, you know, we're looking at different products, but VeeamPN, we've got the availability for AWS.
Yeah.
You know, we just announced a launch partner for the data protection for VMware Cloud on AWS, which is pretty cool. We have to do some funky things there to get it working.
Yeah, I was about to say, when I first was looking at this internal, I was like, oh, everyone's just probably going to do agent-based backup, which is how a lot of people do backups in AWS. And then when I heard y'all were figuring out how to do an agentless, I'm like, oh, that's going to be some storage witchcraft. Like, I want to see what on earth, well, you know, I have new whatever was involved in orchestrating that. Well, so,
funnily enough, like Mike will probably say that we're not doing too much magic. Like, it kind of just worked. I don't want to.
It just works.
But we have to do a few things. But really, at the base, if you go in and do your right click, add a vCenter, you just add the vCenter that's now the VMware Cloud vCenter,
right?
And it goes in, and there's not that much difference. So Michael might want to.
Yeah, so it's the same VBR, VBackup and Replication console that you have in your on-premises normal vSphere environment. And that's exactly the same tool set is what we use for VMware on AWS to protect those workloads. Hmm. It's not just the backup as well. So backup's obviously important, but also being able to use that as a replication site or...
And so you're using HotAd rather than network-based transport as the solution?
So networking won't work at all. And that's a little bit of a limitation of the way that you guys have done the code and put it out there. I think there's a different VDDK library as well as part of the build up there. But so anything that's network-related, like instant VM recovery, that won't work.
Yeah, no power NFS.
Yeah, no power NFS. But, you know, as it stands now, it's pretty functional. So we're pretty happy with that.
I like it when things are pretty functional and not checkboxes. Yeah, we can do that. Please don't deploy. No, it's you know, it's going to be good. So
I like it. Well, gentlemen, I'm sure you've got lots of great demos online because I know you had those for VeeamON. So we'll be sure to add those links to the show notes of this week's podcast. I just want to tell you, man, as a Veeam Vanguard, love the products that you guys are coming out with. Love the culture in your company. And just keep doing the great work, man. We really appreciate you guys.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
No worries. Cheers.
Cheers.
First off, I love talking to these guys. They're just intense technologists. They're passionate about it and they know their stuff.
Yep.
These are people that, you know, if I have a question about vCloud Director at 3 a.m, I'm going to reach out to Spiteri. Yeah. I mean, part of that's because he's in Perth and he's, you know, I assume waking up at that time or something, right, since it's the opposite side of the world. But I mean, he wasn't for a long time kind of the voice of the VCAN or the artist formerly known as VCAN.
Yes.
But, you know, it's great to see them making sure to deliver, you know, maintain that next generation backup platform that's relevant in the hybrid cloud era. And, you know, the support for AWS, being able to stretch networking appropriately for DR testing with their very skilled DR partners, as well as also, you know, really pushing some limits that they've had that lab functionality for a while, but seeing some of the new stuff they're pushing there, it's really neat.
Yeah, for sure. And it's so impressive that they're actually doing the agentless version, which is a requirement if you're talking about AWS. So always great to catch up with our boys from Veeam. All right. And lastly, we had a conversation. So we started this podcast where John was gone and I was, you know, and I had a fill-in co-host. And then we're going to end it with an episode where I was gone. So John was the host and he had a co-host, Mr. Duncan Epping. And John, you guys talked to Fujitsu. Really cool conversation. So let's play that first and then we'll add some commentary.
Over the years, it's really a strong partnership with trust and confidence. We are involved from a very early stage on. So we know the internal project name of VCF. Later on, it was EvoRag and then EvoSDC, now VCF. And before that, the internal project name. And we were able to influence also the product and what we can do for it. We are collecting a lot of feedback from the market and giving that back on the weekly calls directly to the headquarters in Palo Alto to make sure that the development is in a way that the customer expects and get the best out of it. And we see a lot of developments there where we are giving feedback and then coming back to that. And it also improves on the other way that we are receiving requirements from VMware and we directly steer this out in the development of the hardware to make sure that hardware and software fits perfect together for customers.
We've kind of had an overarching theme of a lot of our conversations this week of, you know, listening to the customer and the customer's driving the roadmap. So, yeah, it's great having the partners as a vehicle for that. Obviously, listening to the customers themselves, working with the partners and going in both directions. It really seems what ultimately works tends to be what the customers want. Wouldn't you say that, Duncan?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think one thing that stands out, I've been involved with some of the work that Fujitsu has been doing early on. Mm-hmm. I was part of the EvoRail team back then. It was still called Marvin. I think we even met
back then
in Palo Alto.
I know. It was my first project when I joined Fujitsu. And I was working here. I was in Sunnyvale and we had to work together in Palo Alto.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is that, you know, when you talk about Fujitsu, not a lot of people seem to realize that you guys have a huge history when it comes to things like vSAN, for instance, as well. I know you guys have a booth at the vSAN HCI zone.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on the offering that you guys have from a vSAN perspective?
Yeah. vSAN is a strategic product, of course. And so we are spending a lot of efforts to make sure that all the hardware and the software is working together and make sure that we have the right models in place for compute power and capacity, etc. Fujitsu has a long history in terms of achieving energy savings, best in performance, and so on. And when you have a look on your website, guys, to the VMware.com, and you have a look on the VE mark, so then you can see that Fujitsu is leading in, I don't know, 80% or something like that in all the cases with best performance. At the same point in time, we are achieving the best energy savings, which is maybe not the most important topic here in the US market, but especially in the European market or in the Asian market, where the cost for energy is very high, you have to make sure that your data center is running on lowest cost.
Duncan and I were comparing power bills a while back, and it's kind of jarring hearing the difference in power there. And also, when you do like embedded deployments, or you've got stuff that's at a mine or an oil rig, somewhere where it's off a normal grid and it's having to operate on diesel generators or things like that, power can become... I also vaguely remember you guys having something with servers that could tolerate higher thermal tolerances.
Yes, yes, yes. So we are able to run in up to 45 degrees Celsius. I'm not pretty sure. I think this is about 111 or something like that. So without any cooling.
So you could run outside here in Vegas.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, exactly. So when I was arriving here in Las Vegas, I was coming out of the airport and was, wow, pretty hot, right? And I really thought in this environment we can run without any cooling, which makes it very interesting also, for example, for military and other organizations spending some vacations in hot areas of this world. And then cooling is pretty easy. But it's not only for these special use cases. It's also for the standardized data center, right?
Yeah, I mean, raise that temperature in the data center, drop that power bill.
So. Yeah, yeah. So before I joined Fujitsu, I was working 17 years as a CIO. And consumption was always a big topic. And I calculated what would happen if I would run all the data center with Fujitsu technology. And the savings was about 160,000 euros, which is about $40,000-$50,000 a year. And so a lot of money where you can buy some other useful things for your infrastructure.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing that stood out to me when we initially met, I was looking at the different configurations that you guys have. I mean, there's loads of different configurations, but what stood out to me the most is the build quality of the Fujitsu solutions. I was really impressed. I mean, I've seen many different server models, but the build quality of Fujitsu, it's unlike anything else I've ever seen.
I used to work with some Eternuses, and those things look like you could hit them with an anti-tank round or something.
For sure.
That's true. And as an example, so the Eternus, I mean, this is storage unit, but it has a real-time operating system, and you can run a 100% workload, and you achieve less than a millisecond latency. So it's a real-time operating system. And for the servers, we are choosing the right components to make sure they are working in every kind of environment. And Fujitsu is doing a lot more than just servers. So as an example, we are the market leader for deep sea repeaters. So if you connect two different continents with an internet connection, deep sea, every 2.5 kilometers you need a repeater. And in 11,000 meter depth, so service becomes a challenge. So, and it should never fail. And in the last 40 years, we have placed more than 2,500 of those repeaters on the deep sea, and not only one failed. And that's the quality that we would like to achieve.
Wow. Yeah, that's those things. I've complained about having to drive to data centers that are 2 hours away. I've complained about data centers that were in bunkers and I couldn't get cell service in. Yeah, swapping components out at that depth, that's incredible.
Yeah, I guess the other question that we have when it comes to vSAN is how do you prepare your systems for both smaller customers and larger customers? What do you guys have in order to allow for different types of scale and offer flexibility to your customers?
Yeah. So the good thing with vSAN is you can start small, you can grow fast, you can be big as it's necessary to serve your demand. Typically, we're starting, when I think about our largest customer, two clusters, so 128 nodes. Typically, they are starting with four nodes, just doing testing and how does it look and feel, etc. And then over time, they are growing. And we have one customer, he ordered last year more than 60 appliances, and it was installed in less than 2 days. So this was really unbelievable because of all those integrations with the hardware and the software. And in the meantime, we are serving all the demands. We have data center installations, of course, a lot. Branch offices, very big topic, where vSAN made some achievements so that you don't need any switches between the nodes anymore, etc.
Yeah, the new two-node direct connects, amazing.
Yeah, it's saving money. And VDI. So a lot of VDI installations as well. And so this shows very impressive that vSAN is able to serve all the demands. Doesn't matter, is it data center or is it branch office where you don't have IT guys.
And do all that quickly. That's just... I love always that comment when people talk about the speed of deployment, because one of the data centers I used to work in, there was a receiving area I'd always walk past, and I would see these giant, you know, chassis systems and arrays and giant chassis switches that would just get left there for like 6 months at a time while they figured out how to get three-phase electrical power to run these things. And I mean, everyone doesn't think about how much money gets wasted in gear waiting to be installed or waiting on all the other requirements. And not saying there's nothing wrong with, you know, things that do that, but moving quickly, one, it delivers outcomes better. Also, two, you're not, you know, paying for support agreements for something that sits in a box for 6 months. So,
you should use your resources and bring the business forward instead of installing software on hardware.
So what are some of the things that, you know, from your partnership with VMware and vSAN that customers should just expect, you know, that there, what are things they should be looking towards?
So customers can expect that all the systems are really working together. And I give you an example. So we are always talking with customers about DIY approach, do it yourself versus do I really need an integrated solution or an appliance? And I give you an example. So when we started with vSAN at the very early days, we were doing testing in the labs. And after 12 hours with 100% workload, suddenly the server was stopped working. And nobody knows what's going on. And after investigation, we saw it was not a problem of the server, it was not a problem of VMware, it was a problem of the firmware of a controller from a...
But lifecycle makes up part of the whole solution.
Yeah, from a supplier. And so the thing is, we were talking with the supplier and he was doing the fixing of the firmware and then it was working. The issue is, as a customer, you're facing the same thing, right? So you're buying 20 nodes or something like that and you put all those things together, put the software on top, bring the system up and running, and suddenly it crashed. So, but you will not be able to fix it because you have 20 controllers and you can talk to the controller vendor and then maybe he's opening
DOS and run some CLI commands. Yeah. Nobody has time for that.
Yeah, exactly. So. But we are buying 200,000 of that. And we have a contract and supply chain and all those hotline things, etc. And it was getting fixed in less than 24 hours. And I think that's a big benefit that we can bring to the market for our customer.
Well, and I also love the integrations you guys have because y'all are one of our four launch partners for Configuration Assist, being able to do driver and firmware lifecycle management and controllers. Yeah. I mean, that's, Duncan, you've been passionate about this.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the number of partners that we have from that perspective, there's only four on the list right now, and Fujitsu is part of that. So, you know, that's for us, it's a great thing that you guys are invested at that level. I mean, being able to operate the firmware straight from the vSphere web client, doing that with one click, you know, going out to the Fujitsu website, picking up those disk controller firmware, and then applying it automatically is just amazing. And I was just in a session by Christian Dickman and from Germany, and he showed us that in the future we'll be doing that with update managers. You know, hopefully Fujitsu will be on board of that as well. I'm assuming you guys will be on board.
I'm pretty sure we are. And guys, one more thing, so to speak. We have enhanced the lifecycle management. So what we are doing for customers is we have an enterprise lifecycle management. As you know, vSAN is not only supporting the vSAN typical components. We have a huge hardware compatibility list. And also we are facing very often the fact that customers say, we would like to go ahead with storage provided by the server, so the direct attached storage. But on the other hand, we have a SAN installation and we must think about of using the system over the next 1 or 2 years and also for migration scenarios, etc. So we say, it's not a problem because fiber channel controllers on the HCL list and you can use that. But how doing the lifecycle management? And so we have our own suite own software suite, where we are able to do the lifecycle management in a certified environment. And this is highly appreciated from our customers and gives additional value to the customer. And I think not many other vendors have this. Yeah.
No, I fully agree. And it also allows customers to do, you know, get the best of both worlds. On one hand, have the traditional storage system sitting there. On the other hand, having vSAN sitting there. Use that maybe for different types of workloads, or potentially migrate from A to B right when the time is.
Or use vVols, and then just, you know, based on the policy requirements, it figures out whether to place that on that, you know, that Fujitsu array that's exposing vVols, or that vSAN cluster. Let's find the right place for the workload, and that policy based management cleanly works for both. We all play nice together here. So.
Yeah, fully agree. Now, well, we have a lot of customers listening to the. To the podcast as well, and I'm guessing that there's a bunch of people out there that are not using HCI at this point in time yet. So, you know, from us to you, what the question is, why is it now the right time to start embracing HCI? Why is the time to adopt HCI?
Yeah, so as I said in the beginning, before I joined Fujitsu, I was working as a CIO, and I wasn't retail business. And retail business was pretty clear, you know, top business in the year was Christmas business, and all the IoT infrastructure was there to serve all those demands. And you know, every year 10% plus customers, 5% plus revenue or whatsoever. Now we are facing the fact that the world is in a digital transformation, business is in digital transformation. So you're grabbing data from everywhere, from social media, you're connected to partners, to other global acting companies, etc. The 724 operations is a big topic always, of course. But on the other hand, you are facing the fact that the amount of data that you have to operate and to calculate, etc., and bring in the system is getting more and more unpredictable. And that's the big issue for customers. And the concepts that we had in the past where we were thinking about what's the right storage system, what's the right amount.
Let's predict the next 3 years of capacity.
Exactly.
Get out my crystal ball you know.
Yeah, exactly, Dallas. And so this is not working anymore, right? And there's a risk. I mean, storage is pretty expensive. And if you have to change the storage because,
Well, there's new technologies. I mean, storage has been advancing so very quickly.
Yeah.
And those advancements come to the servers first. So.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest problem is that it doesn't usually work really well for the storage vendor because, you know, they have all of the investment from the customer coming up front.
Yeah.
So that's when they cash in. But from a customer perspective, they end up losing.
Yeah. I mean, with the hyper-converged, it's much more easier because you can grow with your demand. If there are additional data is coming in, you just add additional server. The server at the same point in time is the most affordable device on the market. And so it makes more easier, riskless for customers to go ahead, less infrastructure pieces, less stuff and skills that you need for that, operational costs, cooling, etc. So you're reducing complexity. And I think now the time is right to go ahead. And to move away from those north-south concept to an east-west-based concept, which we are seeing in the web scale-out scenarios.
So you guys have worked with Flash, obviously, for a very long time. With all-flash vSAN, are you seeing strong adoption? What are you seeing, and why are customers choosing all-flash?
So we see that the new software versions coming out on the market are providing very useful features such as deduplication, compression, etc. And to make sure that your CPU, etc., can handle this in a way that you are expecting in terms of latency and speed, Flash is a excellent technology to do that. On the other hand, we have seen that customers can achieve up to 70% energy savings by using Flash. And Flash is a very robust technology, so no spinning drives, etc., no heat, so cooling is reduced, the operation effort for replacement, etc. So it's not only the performance, which is the big part, no question about it, but the overall cost for Flash is definitely better, even if the cost or the initial investment is a little bit higher.
Yeah. It's a really an interesting point, if you ask me. The reliability part, the power consumption, the cooling, it's something that not a lot of vendors bring up, but it's interesting that you mentioned this, because now if you look at what we were just discussing with regards to the temperature in the data center that you guys can tolerate, you know, having an all-flash configuration as part of that, you know, it just makes
cooling.
A lot of sense.
Well, it's vibration too, and you got mobile military applications.
Exactly.
So not only, we're running our data center in 110 Fahrenheit, but we're also, you know, it's in the back of a Jeep rattling around or back of a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
Tolerance shock. So, well, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, and thank you for being here.
And thanks for being a great partner.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
So it's really interesting, the stuff they've always focused around environmentals and keeping cooling efficient, being able to run servers hotter, lower power. And some of that comes from their pedigree in the data center. You know, these guys have been doing supercomputing for a long, you know, giant clusters for a very long time and things. Oh, yeah. But also just the implications on mobility. When you're in the back of a Jeep, you've only got so much power and cooling budget when you're putting these things in chips or mobile type platforms. So on one hand, it does obviously help the data center and the capital budget there, which it's not about density of space. It's about density of power and cooling. That's where your real costs come in for most people who aren't in Tokyo or New York. But also on those mobile applications where you've got, you know, servers are being deployed in hospital environments and things like that, so to speak, or mobile environments. Shrinking down the cluster, so to speak. It's just a powerful story.
Yeah, that one was pretty fascinating. I love talking technology and understanding the specifics, but it's always fun to see real world examples and hear stories of our technology in use in the field, so to speak. So I thought that was pretty exciting. And again, big thanks to Fujitsu for being such a great VMware partner. Also to Cohesity and Veeam. I mean, this is the idea. These are partner perspectives. And so three really great partners this week. And so it was a real pleasure to talk to all three of those. All right, John, anything else before we land this plane?
Let's do this. Let's bring it down.
Let's bring it down. All right. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Thank you so much to all the awesome partners that shared their perspectives this week. And until next week, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.